Welcome to a brand new episode of Calm It, recording Wednesday, December 2nd, about 10 o'clock here in Boston. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. First show in 2 weeks, Lebowitz. Thanksgiving obviously presents some challenges. It's a short week, but I hope... How was your plate? Was it full?
Oh, it was full. So it was the second and the third.
There you go.
It was a good Thanksgiving. Obviously, it was different than most years. We only had about like six people at my place. So under those guidelines, but it was still nice. I honestly don't mind a quaint Thanksgiving. You know, when you start bringing too many relatives in, that's when, you know, politics begin to, you know, start being discussed and, you know, sports starts being discussed at a equally emotional level. And, you know, mayhem can ensue, at least in my household. So this kind of prevented that. So it was a bit of a blessing in disguise, good food, you know, family, and obviously people who are back in the area that maybe you get to see. So it was nice. I enjoyed it. One less football game, but still fun.
Yeah, see, I love Big Thanksgiving. I do. I love a Big Thanksgiving specifically in New England. I mean, this is where it happened. Thanksgiving, that holiday is a home game for us right here in this area. So, you know, it was what it was. It was nice. Ran through the leftovers. Somebody asked me yesterday. I was on a show on Sports Map Radio. And they said, well, you know, what's the expiration date for leftovers? You're still eating leftovers. I honestly didn't know how to answer the question because I've never had leftovers last past probably Saturday at the absolute latest. Mine were gone by Friday. But
wow.
It was a good, fun little holiday there. Like you mentioned, I did miss the, you know, the Wednesday night, the night before Thanksgiving, when you go to the local bar, you see everybody from high school, and making the usual proclamation that I do on the show, because people come up to me, oh, I read everything you do, I listen to everything you do, and that if somebody mentions this show to me when I see them at the bar, I will buy them a drink. And I usually say it on the episode before Thanksgiving, and I haven't bought anybody a drink. So
next year, will be the year.
There we go, hopefully.
And you bring up a good point about Thanksgiving. It's not like you're just eating poorly on that one day. You eat poorly for at least four straight days, just given the contents you have, the leftover contents you have. So it really is a sneaky holiday. I love it. I'm a big Thanksgiving person, but it also ruins my week. So now I'm kind of back on track. I try not to eat super poorly, at least during the week. This time of year, it's extremely, extremely tough, especially with what's going on and the holidays and everything coming up. And we got Hanukkah, like 9 days. So we got more food that will be eaten very soon.
We do. All right, let's get into what kind of football. We're going to start with the big news. And you mentioned the only two games on Thanksgiving. That is because Raiders and Steelers was moved, then it was moved again, then it was moved again. I mean, where do we start with this? The NFL's just willingness to put players in harm's way, their reluctance to have a week 18, the fact they got bumped from Wednesday night because of the tree lighting, which is hilarious. Where do you want to start?
I guess it's just going back to how badly the NFL botched this at the beginning of the season and how this situation, I can't believe I'm saying this. I feel kind of bad for the Ravens because this is a team that's now 6-4. This game's very important to them, and they haven't had practice, and now they're going to have a short week going into next week. I think it's a Tuesday game they're playing, so it's going to be like this is Monday Night Football for them, essentially, at least rest-wise, and then they're going to have a Sunday game after that, so they're going to have two straight short weeks. In addition to just not being able to practice, this is essentially a situation that could put an end to their season, which is wild to think of considering they were, you know, the best team in the AFC or one of the best teams in the NFL last year. So I guess it just goes back to the NFL not having the foresight to understand that this was an inevitability and that, you know, given the extent of you know, how often this has happened, they should have had some sort of bye week in the middle of the season for every team to make up these games, a bye week at the end of the season for the same thing, but they didn't. And now you have teams like the Ravens that are you know, completely out of luck. And you have teams like the Steelers that, you know, despite this being the second time it's happened to them due to no fault of their own, they're 10-0, which is crazy, but still this affects them as well. So it's just a botched job from the NFL, as a whole.
So I don't agree with that. I do agree with that. The NFL had 5 months to plan for this. All the other leagues, they had to come up with their plan on the spot. It was not the case for the NFL. They had 5 months to plan for it, and they were twiddling their thumbs. So I agree that it's a botched job for the NFL. I don't feel bad for the Ravens because this was self-inflicted. It's not like they did their best or anything like that. They had a staff member who was careless, and nobody checked him. Nobody said, hey, put on a mask. Nobody said, hey, like, where have you been? You're walking around without a mask. Like, nobody bothered to call this guy on his BS, and that's why it spread. So I don't feel bad for the team because they didn't take it seriously. I feel bad for the Steelers because they, by all accounts, have taken it seriously. Same reason I don't feel bad for the Broncos. Wear your masks. It's not that hard. I know it's a pain in the ass, but it's not that hard. So and the other thing about, the Ravens being a great team, how I feel about the Ravens. I think they peaked last year. I think they are a team that won because they were running a niche offense. There's now a blueprint. And yeah, I think 6-5 is about right for them, if we're being honest, COVID or not. But that's aside the point. No, I have a lot of trouble feeling bad for the Ravens. I have a lot of trouble feeling bad for a team like the Broncos. Titans, I had trouble feeling bad for, though they're fine. The Steelers are the kind of team I feel bad for. The team, even the Bills, and they had their schedule get juggled. Like, it sucks that the teams who take it seriously have to get punished too. And yes, moving the game is punishment, whether it's intended to be or not.
Yeah, it is. And you can't help whether your opponent has these outbreaks or not. So again, the Steelers, it's pretty remarkable that they've continued to maintain, stay on track despite all of that. And you bring up a good point that strength and conditioning coach in the facility, not carrying around his tracker, not wearing a mask, showing symptoms on top of that. I mean,
was he symptomatic? I hadn't seen that. He was symptomatic.
That's what I had originally read. Maybe they updated those reports. That's what I had originally read. And that it's inexcusable. Even if the symptoms are minor, even if you're one of these people, and God bless you, if you're one of these people who's like, COVID's fake, yada, 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 whatever. I'm kind of tired of that whole narrative at this point anyway, but be that person. Fine. This has nothing to do with being that person though. When you go into your facility, bringing in, COVID or having symptoms and knowing it's a potential that you bring it in, you understand how the NFL has to deal with this, and no stand you take as a strength and conditioning coach is going to change that. So it's just careless and it's selfish. It costs the team, this week, pretty much these past 2 weeks. It should probably cost this guy his job, because I think it's an indication of how well a team player or team coach he really is. And that's awful. And then you had the Broncos not wearing masks in the quarterback room. Listen, I think it's easy for people to become complacent when we're almost a year into this thing. I get that, but you have to keep in perspective. You have to, abide by the proper precautions, because what happened to the Broncos could happen to your team if you have a position room that has an outbreak, or what happened to the Ravens could happen to your team if you have a strength and conditioning coach that's a complete a-hole. So this is just it's a bit of a mess. It's definitely a bit of a mess. I wonder what happens to the NFL if this occurs during the postseason, because now we're in December. This is happening. There's no reason this doesn't happen in January. There's no reason this doesn't happen Super Bowl week. So there's still a lot of things I don't think most fans have considered. I just hope that the NFL has more than they took into account a COVID season prior to the year starting.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what I wanted to get into here before we move on, is that the NFL, and you brought it to the postseason. I wasn't even thinking about that, but you're right. But the NFL seems to be on this fast track, this no pun intended, this blitz towards getting the season done and not using that week 18. And, I've seen the justification for it. I don't necessarily agree with it. Basically, once you go to a week 18, you open the door for a week 19, which then you have to move the Super Bowl. And you also create essentially double bye weeks, and it's or you could have a team like the Steelers could have their first round bye, but then have to play week 18 and essentially lose their bye. So, they want to avoid that at all costs. But yeah, eventually you run out of time to reschedule games. Are you going to have a team play two games week 17? Are you going to have a team play Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday? You know, week 16 Sunday and then two games week 17 Wednesday and Sunday. Are you going to do that? I wouldn't rule that out. They're having teams fly out the day of games. It's not that much further of a stretch. You're already technically going against the CBA. So, yeah, they seem to just be pedaled to the metal and trying to get this done. And if you're a player on a competitive team, right, a team that really is a shot to win this thing, if you're a player on the Steelers, a player on the Chiefs, the Titans, the Seahawks, whatever it may be, the Saints, you know, you could make the difference in your team making the Super Bowl or not simply by wearing a mask and not being stupid about this. So, because they're going to play the games now. It doesn't matter if your starting quarterback's down. It doesn't matter if all your quarterbacks are down. It doesn't matter if 30% of your roster's down. Like, this is not exaggeration. This is happening. So, this as much as it sucks, and Matthew Slater, you know, I was on a conference call with him Monday, and he said that they don't trust the league to keep them safe. And I don't blame him. And he basically said, like, how can you trust when nobody is safe right now? Nobody, the general population. How can you trust the NFL to keep the players safe? And he's right. So it sucks, but it's on the players at this point because the league's just going to plow right ahead.
Yeah, they have their priority is, you know, to keep things going and to continue to make money. And canceling games is a money losing decision. So they're gonna, you know, do whatever they can to make sure that doesn't happen, including, you know, putting a team out in the field that does not have a quarterback. So that kind of gave us an indication of how you know serious the NFL is about that. And also, just, you know, you bring up teams that deserve the situation they're in. I don't think the Patriots are one of those teams. A lot of people were acting like the Patriots were given preferential treatment, which I think is laughable considering that they didn't have nearly the amount of you know bad publicity or you know protocol breaking protocol you know instances as we've seen with these two latest outbreaks. So it's a frustrating situation to be in. And my last takeaway is I really hope and I think we'll have this. The vaccine will be ready and good to go next season. Is not affected by this stuff whatsoever, which I'm optimistic will be the case.
Yeah. So that's what it's sounding like. So that's certainly encouraging. All right, before we move on to other sports, there's one more NFL note we have to get to. One NFL head coach or former head coach, it looks like, has been outed with a burner. And that would be one Matthew Edward Patricia. And I emphasize the Edward because I honestly don't know who originally found this, because by the time I saw this last night, it was already out there. Andrew Siciliano had tweeted about it. A couple of other NFL reporters, you know, SB Nation type pages had tweeted about it. But somebody discovered this yesterday. At Eddie P. Lions fan on Twitter, EDDYP Lions fan on Twitter, dad of three, Detroit Lions fan, tech nerd. You know who else a dad of three? Was until a couple days ago a Lions fan and is a tech nerd. That would be Matthew Eddie P. Patricia. And here are some of the tweets, Lebowitz. You just kind of tell me what you think about this. So somebody tweeted that they don't think these are all replies. There's no original tweets. These are all replies. Somebody tweeted that Matt Patricia's a clown, and Eddie P. replies it was more Bob Quinn's fault, the GM. Somebody asked why so. Eddie P., using a first-round pick on a tight end is the biggest gripe. There were other players that could have helped, such as DL Ed Oliver, who would have played very well in Coach Patricia's scheme. He always refers to him as Coach Patricia. Not Patricia, not Matt Patricia, Coach Patricia. I want Stafford back. There's a tweet about Matthew Stafford's future in Detroit. Somebody quotes a Lions fan account. I want Stafford back. Eddie P. Lions would be better moving on. Stafford is uncoachable. Okay. I got to find this one other one here that I got to show you. Here it is right here. Right here. Somebody says that, you know, the Lions were good to move on from Patricia. This was after he was fired. There's 3 days worth of tweets, September 2nd and 3rd, and then yesterday. So he'd already been fired. Somebody tweets, a good thing they fired him, blah, blah, blah. Funny you blame everything on the proven winner coach and not the players, Eddie P. Lions fan writes. The scheme is proven to work. Blame the players for not executing. Guy shoots back. Proven winner, he didn't prove blank here. Say that to his Super Bowl rings, of which he has three, by the way. Proven winner. Did you see the drafts the team had before Coach Patricia took over? Bob Quinn was rightfully fired. Lions fans are going to miss out on what would have been accomplished. The only awful thing Coach Patricia ever did was hitching his wagon to an organization like the Detroit Lions. Lebowitz, how is this not Matt Patricia?
I think we made this point before we got on. It's so obvious. There's one other factor, by the way, that you didn't mention. At least I didn't hear you mention it. If you go to his likes, there's two tweets. There's four tweets liked. Well, there's five tweets liked, four of which mentioned Darius Slay, and they're not very kind to Darius Slay. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Darius Slay the person who openly talked crap about Matt Patricia and
did
then
not
got
like
traded?
Matt Patricia. Yeah, did not like Matt Patricia, Darius Slay. They didn't like each other.
And so there was also a tweet in response about that I'm looking through it now, in response about Darius Slay. And Darius Slay, obviously, if you watch the Seahawks-Eagles game, DK Metcalf had like 170 yards receiving, went off. And it seems like at least Eddie P. Lyons fan, at Eddie P. Lyons fan, enjoys that Darius Slay had that come to him. The only thing, the only reason why you can't say it's Matt Patricia, it's because it's so obvious that it is. Like, it just seems like if you were trying to make it seem like it's not, if he was trying to make it seem like it wasn't him, and it is, like, you cannot have done a worse job to literally say, you know, every, like, dad of three, married, Lions fan, Techner. I mean, you mentioned all those things you could describe Matt Patricia as you know, as being.
And
so,
like, he's following Lions players and staff and whatever, Patriots players and staff, and Barstool. And we know he's a big Barstool guy. Patricia is. In real life, we know he's a Barstool guy, right? He wore the clown shirt coming off the plane.
And to be fair, like, a lot of people follow those types of accounts. It is weird, though, that he's falling at the Patriots and there is that connection there.
There's too many coincidences. Like, and somebody pointed out, like, maybe it's a family member. I don't think so. Why would a family member go through all this? When has it ever been a family member? Whether it was Colangelo or Durant or Gary Sheffield or whoever. When has it ever been a family member?
It never is. And that makes no sense. Why would that family member? So that family member essentially hates Matt Patricia and is trying to set him up. That's what that comes. Like, that's my first thought. Like, oh, it's a family member. Oh, so they're trying to, in a really convoluted way, set him up to make it seem like he has a burner account, because that's, again, how obvious this seems. I love these stories, by the way. I love when burner accounts are exposed. I love it the most when the person tweets out the burner account tweet on their actual account. Fortunately, Matt Patricia doesn't have an actual account, but you could imagine that he might have made that mistake, which would have been amazing. So if I were Matt Patricia and I in fact did run this account, if that is the truth, you gotta not embrace it and say that you are Matt Patricia, but continue to tweet as if, you know, you have nothing to hide. I think that's the way to go if you're Matt Patricia. Continue to tweet as if you have nothing to hide. If you delete it or you stop tweeting, then I think that validates, you know, these theories, doesn't
but
it?
But he had it for 2 days in September. And then didn't tweet again until yesterday. So if he tweeted regularly and then stopped, I think it validates it. I don't know that that's the case here.
Yeah, I mean, he could just deny and just stop tweeting. It's not legal what he did, but I don't know. It could affect his career in the NFL.
Absolutely.
So we'll see. I think this is great, though. I hope it's him. Another great fact, he has his DMs open.
So really?
His DMs are open, at least what I'm looking at, yep.
DM him, ask him if he's going to be back with the Patriots next year.
I'm doing that right. Hey, Matty P.
Eddie P.
Oh, Eddie P.
I'd love Eddie to see P. those DMs right now.
I'm going to put in parentheses, wink, wink.
grab that screenshot and put it on the either send it to me, or if you want to put it from the show Twitter account, I think we put that out there. Before we move on, give me your percentage that it's met, Patricia.
I don't think it's over 50%. No, you know what?
Really?
Jeez. I'm going to go with an exact number. I'm going to go 58%.
Okay.
58%.
I'm at like 90%.
90%. Okay. You're
too
talking.
Many. If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it looks like a duck, it's probably a duck. No?
Yeah. Yes. But that, yeah. No, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. And that's a good expression for the situation. But I don't know. I just don't know. It's so obvious. It might be. It might have to be. It might have to be. I don't know. I kind of want it to be, but I also want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm just eager to see what this account does next. And I'm hoping and praying that there is another tweet coming from this account within the next day or so. It would be even better if he just admits it. Like, that would be amazing.
I need him to tweet to Malcolm Butler and be like, bro, what happened in 2017?
Or if he tweets the video of the pick and he's like, look what I did.
Look what I did, yeah. Look what Coach Patricia did.
Right, we can only hope and pray.
Yeah, let's move on here because I think we're up against it. You have the clock again, but I obviously haven't done a show since all of the Celtics nonsense. And all right, let's go through this here.
Yep.
They had a chance to get Miles Turner, who, but you know, I've been calling for them to get Miles Turner for years. Mm-hmm. That has been the guy I've had circled. I never actually thought it would happen. I didn't think he was attainable. I didn't think the Pacers would be dumb enough to trade him, let alone in a sign and trade. But that's the guy I've been calling on for years. So he has Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, who would have been a good fit. Like, fine, nice player. No, then he has to go out and get Victor Oladipo. For some reason, Danny does. So then that falls apart. So then it's Charlotte. And then it looks like Gordon Hayward's going to leave for nothing. And then he lands the largest trade exception in NBA history. Here's – before I get into the Turner part of it, Lovewitz, you've seen Family Guy, yes?
Of course.
Okay. So for those who haven't, there's a scene from Family Guy. Long story short, Peter, the main character, Peter has to – if he goes and sits through a seminar, he gets a boat. And the whole week leading up to the seminar, he's excited about getting the boat. He's talking about the boat, the boat, the boat. So he goes, sits through the seminar. He goes to meet with the salesperson, goes, I want my boat. And the guy goes, well – you can have the boat, or you can have the mystery box. And he holds up like a shoe box with question marks on it. You can have the boat, or you can have the mystery box. And Peter's wife's like, we'll take the boat. And Peter goes, no, hang on. The mystery box could be anything. It could even be a boat. You know how much we've wanted one of those. He takes the mystery box, and it's like comedy club tickets or whatever. So to me, that is what Danny Ainge did. This team has needed a rim protector, a rebounder. And yes, if that guy could shoot threes, it would be awfully advantageous. That is what the Celtics have needed for the last 3 years. They had that guy right there. Right there, Lovitz. He was right there. The Pacers were going to give the Celtics Miles Turner for nothing. Nothing. It was right there. Danny Ainge took the mystery box. You know, maybe, you know, this trade exception could turn into a player we really need. Could turn into a player like Miles Turner. He was right there. My God.
So I think that I'm not as down on what the Celtics did as you are, or as most Celtics fans for that matter.
Look, I mean, I think it's fine. So let me clarify. I think it's fine. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate Tristan Thompson. He definitely gives them what they need. I think Jeff Teague's a fine pickup. Like, you can't make those moves if Hayward just walks, right? You need to get under the luxury tax, whatever. You know, and I'm totally fine with them not bringing Hayward back. I think Hayward is done. I think the only team that screwed up worse than the Celtics is the Hornets for giving him that contract. But,
yeah,
you know, I just – Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, that they needed a big – they needed like a big who could be a presence in the paint, and they needed a scorer off the bench. That's Miles Turner and Doug McDermott. Like, can Tristan Thompson and Jeff Teague fill those roles? Sure, fine. Not like Miles Turner and Doug McDermott would have. So they ended up okay. Like, I think they're – and there's one other move we'll talk about very briefly at the end. Like, I think it's, they're in good shape. But they just – that was the home run. If they make that move, I think they're the favorites in the East. if they go out and get Miles Turner. Now, they probably lose in the conference finals again.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this doesn't put them over the top by any stretch. Neither would – I don't think Miles Turner would have either.
He's so good.
He's a good player. He's definitely a really good player. But I think this came down to, you know, Gordon Hayward wanting more money. And I think he was leveraging his situation on his end as well. The reports indicated that the Celtics and the Pacers were at around 4 years, $100 million, and the Hornets signed him for 4 years, $120 million.
Yeah, so the same reporters had him shopping for real estate in Indiana, and that he wanted to go home and he was ready to take the hometown discount. So I wonder how much of that is Danny trying to rewrite history after the fact.
It could be, but I don't think that's the case. I think Danny Ainge would have budged at some point, especially considering he essentially took less for Hayward to go to, the Hornets. And also, Miles Turner has a pretty steep contract. It's 3 years more per year than what Tristan Thompson's getting.
I don't know. Anything under $20 million in the NBA is not a bad contract. It's under $20 million a year, and the way teams throw out max contracts left and right, like, I've heard that narrative. I think that's just Celtics fans trying to convince themselves everything's okay. I don't buy the fact that Miles Turner is a bad contract. I don't buy the fact that Tristan Thompson's a better player than Miles Turner. Nobody is saying that if the Celtics make that trade. I think that's just green teamers trying to comfort themselves.
I don't think Tristan Thompson's a better player than Miles Turner. I don't think he's that much worse than a Miles Turner. I think that he fills a void in a similar way that Miles Turner does. I think it's a step up from, you know, Enes Kanter. I think Jeff Teague adds some depth as well, and he's a veteran presence, which is pretty big on a team with as many young guys as the Celtics have. Kemba Walker, good veteran leader. It's nice to have another guy in there like that, though. It wasn't a best case scenario for the Celtics, but to act like Danny Ainge handled this as poorly as he possibly could have, and this is a complete failure, it's not. They opened up cap space. They got under the luxury tax. They signed Jason Tatum to that max extension, which is the most important thing that they will have done this entire decade. So it's not all bad. I think Danny Ainge is usually on the winning side of deals more often than not. This situation may not have been that might not be the case, but Hayward was going to walk, and we knew this. At least he got something to fill a void for the Celtics. I don't think it's a complete botch job. Miles Turner would have been better. I would have liked Miles Turner. Would have liked Doug McDermott. T.J. Ward would have been awesome, although that was a pipe dream. Same with Oladipo. And maybe that's where he made a misstep trying to get too much for what he was offering. But overall, I'll take Thompson. I'll take Teague, especially if they can both stay healthy, and especially if Kemba Walker can come back sooner rather than later.
I think this was the chance to finally enter win now mode for the Celtics, right? And they're staying in this kind of, the kids are young, we'll let them grow. Like, I thought this was the year they finally broke out of it and was like, hey, we're going for this, we're making this happen, and I guess we're gonna have to wait another year.
And this is something I don't get. Maybe I'm a green teamer. I don't think I fall into that category. I'm not too a super homer or anything. But I think the Celtics are a win-now type of team, especially considering that Tatum and Brown are both going to be a year older or a year better, continuing to enter their prime. And they're still relatively young. A lot of it stems, on the fact – or a lot of it depends on whether or not Kemba Walker can stay healthy. I think that's going to be a huge factor this season. But overall – you don't know. We don't know the type of jump that a guy like Jason Tatum is going to take this season. And this is somebody who will be an MVP candidate one day. At least that's what I think. So the win now mode, I think that points. I just don't agree with that. I think they could be a win now mode. It's going to be tough to get over, a Brooklyn Nets type of team, but it's not unattainable. There was a point during the season where a lot of people thought the Celtics were going to make it to the NBA Finals. A lot of people thought the Celtics were going to win it, and they didn't, and it was sad, but I don't think they're as far away from being that team than everyone else is saying.
So here's the one move I actually really got excited about. The Celtics made this offseason. It came – was it yesterday? It was Monday or Tuesday. And that is they signed Evan Turner as an assistant coach. And the reason I'm all excited about them signing an assistant coach in a sport where coaching, probably plays the smallest role of any of the four major sports, is that So Walter McCarty used to play for the Celtics, right? Walter McCarty was an assistant coach. And he was, you know, players kind of described him as he was their guy, right? He was just one of the guys with the players. He played in the NBA for years. He was a guy, one, who the players could relate to and talk to. And also, you know, he a bit more that he could be the bad cop when he needed to, more than Brad Stevens. Like, hey, you need to pick your game up. Hey, you're playing bad. Hey, stop screwing around, like that kind of thing. So he left in March of 2018. He took a head coaching job at Evansville University, small Division I school. And right when he left, it seemed like that's when Kyrie really withdrew and that locker room really fell apart. That's when Kyrie stopped spending time with the team when he was hurt. And then everything, obviously the rest of that story everybody knows. But my point is, like, the locker room never truly recovered after they lost Walter McCarty. He was the only coach on the staff with NBA who had played in the NBA. And then last year, you know, the Celtics had Kara Lawson, who played. She played for Pat Summitt of Tennessee. She played for 12 years in the WNBA, impressive in its own right. But the point I'm kind of getting at here is Brad Stevens is a great X's and O's coach, sure, but he played Division III college basketball. He never even played pro overseas. Like, he just the X's and O's are great, but there's certain things he's just on a personal level he's going to struggle to relate to his players with. That's just a fact. And Kara Lawson, the players seem to love her, and they still do. And she left and took a head coaching job at Duke. But, you know, the reality is the NBA and the WNBA are different. And again, there's life experiences that these players are having that, you know, they might want a coach to help them through, that Kara Lawson or Brad Stevens or any of the other Celtics assistants, none of who played in the NBA, can help with. Until Monday, when Evan Turner signed, the Celtics were one of only three teams in the NBA to not have at least one coach, head coach or assistant, who had played in the NBA. And one of those teams is the Spurs, and they have Greg Popovich. So I'll throw Becky Hammon, who by all accounts is a terrific coach. We'll throw that one out the window. The Jazz are the Jazz. Utah's weird, whatever. So I think, you know, I've had this take for a long time that one of the worst things that's happened to the Celtics in the last 5 years was Walter McCarty leaving, and that they never fully compensated for that loss. And you think, how much can losing an assistant coach hurt? I think it hurt. I think it hurt a good amount. So now that they have Evan Turner, a former player, a guy who was teammates with Marcus Smart, that's how recently he played. Now that they have that guy in the fold, I'm actually really encouraged because I think it's going to do a lot for their growth. I think it's going to do a lot for their chemistry. I think it's really going to help.
Yeah, and this is kind of the crux of the biggest, you know, stain on Brad Stevens, isn't it? You know, he's a young coach, kind of a basketball savant, somebody who you know is as highly respected as really anyone in the game. But he was a D was he D3 player? I think he played D3 at DePauw or
Yep,
one of those schools,
DePauw. Yep.
DePauw, whatever, however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
And he did well in Indiana at Butler, mid-major school with a bunch of guys with chips on their shoulders who weren't all highly recruited, some of them were surely, but making that jump to the NBA, you're dealing with egos. You're dealing with guys who have excelled at every level, who have been highly recruited at every level, and who might not respond as well to somebody who doesn't understand their experience that well, which, you know, Brad Stevens is that guy. You know, he's not somebody who relates to a lot of players in the NBA in a lot of different ways. So when you don't have that presence on your coaching staff, when you don't have those guys that do, I mean, that's a big issue. And I think we look at what this team's looked like over the past few years, and their biggest, you know, hurdles have been usually having to do not with their talent, but a lot of times having to do with the personalities and the egos on this team. So if you can get anyone to help out on that front, whether it's a veteran presence, a veteran player, who I think, you know, maybe Jeff Teague can be that guy to an extent, or a coach like Evan Turner, who's still ridiculously young. He's 32 years old.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's not playing.
When I first saw, like, I half read the tweet and I thought they signed him as a player.
Yeah, because I mean, he's still. You think I didn't follow him all that much last year? Was he on the on the Hawks? But
Minnesota last year. Oh yeah, he's Hawks and Minnesota. He played for both.
But I mean, I figured he still has something left in the tank, and I guess that's not the case, or he's just ready to move on. But that's big, and that could definitely be a massive plus for the Celtics. I think every coaching staff needs that to some degree. And you think in every other sport, you know, that's a given, that every single coaching staff has somebody who played professionally in that league. You know, the Patriots have Gerard Mayo. They'll probably have Dante Hightower next year if Gerard Mayo ends up leaving, and a number of other guys.
Troy Brown, Deion Branch.
Troy Brown. You look at the Red Sox, Alex Cora, obviously. The Bruins, you know, most of their coaches have played.
Cassidy.
Most of those guys have played professionally at some level. So you need it. You need it in the NBA. And Brad Stevens, it's probably his one weak spot. It's being able to relate to those guys as effectively as other coaches in the NBA or coaching staffs.
I would say, because people get worked up when you talk about this, I would say that it's not the ultimate prerequisite to have played in the – like, if you want to coach in the NBA, you have to have played in the NBA. That's not what this is, right? I think, because then people say, oh, well, you know, Becky Hammon, whatever. You know, I don't think you have to have played in the NBA to coach in the NBA. But if you are building a coaching staff, I would want at least one person on that staff who has played in the NBA. It doesn't have to be everybody. It probably shouldn't be everybody, because you get differences of opinion that way. You get different viewpoints. But again, 27, now 28 of 30 NBA teams have at least one coach who played in the NBA. There's a reason for that. So I know we got to wrap this up because we're up against it. You had a real quick Red Sox thought if you want to go on that.
Yeah. Corey Kluber. The Red Sox are currently, if reports
Winchester's own.
Winchester's own. I did not know that. He lives like
why would you know that? Why would anybody know that? Like, what the hell?
Well, I know like Tom Glavine grew up in Billerica, Ricca, you know, one of the best pitchers to ever come out of Massachusetts, let alone the Merrimack Valley. You know about certain people who come from the area who end up playing great, like Brian Wilson, remember him? Not the Beach Boy, the former closer for the Giants from Londonderry. Londonderry, New Hampshire. So you have all these guys. Never knew that Corey Kluber resided in Winchester. Very random.
He's not from here like those guys.
No, I think his it must be his wife. His wife must be from the area, and they decide to settle down here. Might I say, Massachusetts, greater Boston area, is a phenomenal place to settle down. So I don't blame him. But so it makes sense for him to come to Boston, number one. That's a great indication that he's probably serious about coming to the Red Sox. Number two, he dealt with a really bad injury that really affected him for two seasons, the last 2 years, and he hasn't been the same guy. You know, you can look at it two ways. One, he's done, or two, he has a lot to prove, and he's going to be coming in on a contract that's not going to be too expensive for the Red Sox, who are evidently very, very worried about their money situation. So I want them to take a flyer on the guy. The guy won two Cy Youngs. You know, if you go back the 3 to 5 year stretch before he got hurt, arguably the best pitcher in baseball. So bring him in. They need pitching. If he can be your you know, third guy, fourth guy in your rotation, and give you six innings a night or whatever, or just be around a 3.5 ERA, whatever it is, just serviceable. Bring him in. A veteran presence who's been on winning teams, who's had unbelievable success, I think is a no-brainer for the Red Sox, and I'm hoping that they make this deal along with adding to their bullpen, which would also be a priority.
And I would add too, if you want to check out my full thoughts, they're actually up on 985thesportshub.com. If you sign Kluber and he can still throw, but he doesn't have the arm stamina anymore, bullpen's a mess too. Throw him in the bullpen. His last full year, he was 20-game winner. Only time in his career he's done that with a sub-3 ERA. There's a lot. I know he's had the injury history. I know he's a question mark. You could do a lot worse.
I think that you could. This might be sacrilegious. You could say the same thing about Chris Sale, to be honest, at this point.
Oh, no, that's totally fair. Yeah.
So I think that either of those guys, if they're just like, hey, listen, seven innings isn't working for us. We can't make it through an entire season. Fine. One of those guys can be the closer, and you fill a void in that regard as well. At least they're producing something.
If that's your setup closer combo, that would actually be pretty cool. So
I'd rather just one rather than two, but I whatever. As long as they're providing and they last the entire season, or at least most of the season, and are ready for, you know, October baseball, if the Red Sox make it there, then I'll be happy.
You know, Kluber was never one of those guys who you know, was blowing the fastball by people, right? He wasn't, I mean, he had a good fastball, but he's not a guy like Tim Lincecum where it was all based on velocity, right? Once the velocity dipped for Lincecum, he didn't have the movement, he didn't have the placement, and he got blown up. Kluber's not quite there. So even if he's lost a little bit of velocity, he can still be effective. Go ahead.
And we saw Curt Schilling, he adjusted as he got older. Sure. There's guys who know how to age in this game from a pitching perspective. You know, hopefully a former Cy Young winner knows how to do that.
We'll get more into this next week. We'll talk more football as well, basketball, all of it, hockey. Will they have a season? We didn't get into that. We'll get into that on the next show. Make sure you follow us in the meantime on Twitter at Calling It Podcast, and check us out online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. For Alex Lubwitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.